Feed it Japan!
Yeah, I'm gonna tell them you know business. I'm all about my business, but I ain't got no briefcase. Yeah, all I got is whiskey. Open that whiskey, bring it to you. Yeah, I'm leaning up against the door, and my feet are to the floor, and we're messing on go.
Welcome to yet another action-packed episode of Got Fit in Japan, and I am your host, Johnny. And as you fine folks know, Got Fit in Japan is about two dudes, booze, Japan, and the news. And Faders, this is episode number 744. That's right, and Faders, before I move forward, I just have to give you an apology. A sincere apology from the bottom of my heart, because, as of recently, these episodes have not been getting out as regularly as I want them to. And, it's because of my great art exhibition, Tokyo Art Tank, which is happening in 2 weeks. Oh my gosh, Faders, there's just so much going on. It's 1 week. It's a one-week exhibition with 26 artists in 5 rooms with a full bar. And on every single day, I have 1 or 2 events happening. For example, a film festival, yoga classes, drawing classes, painting classes, DJs, bands, poetry reading, jam sessions. There's just so much to do, so many things to take care of that it's really hard to get this podcast on. But this podcast is a project of passion that I've had for many, many years. And I'll do anything and everything I can to get it out as promptly as possible, so please bear with me. And with that out of the way, well, speaking of this podcast and this episode, this is a very special episode, Faders, because in this episode, I am not a host. I am also a listener. I'm going to kick back and listen with you guys. I'm going to sit back in my favorite drink. Holy smokes. That's how exhausted I am. Whoa. I'm going to sit back in my favorite seat and pour myself my favorite drink. There you go. That's what I intended to say. And I'm going to listen along with you guys because in this episode, I am not the host. I am being interviewed by 2 other hosts. I was on the fantastic podcast Cat with Beard in Japan podcast starring Cat and Lady Beard, 2 wonderful people. This is a marvelous podcast. Please listen to it. Please watch it on YouTube. It's great. It's so educational. They talk about otaku stuff, Japanese culture. They interview interesting people doing interesting things here in Japan, including yours truly. So without further ado, let's give it a go. Peace.
What is that, an earthquake?
Hey, podcast kittens, it's Kathy Cat.
And Lady Beard coming at you with another sideburn shaving installment of Cat with Beard. We got my homie Johnny in the house.
Woo. Hello.
What's up, Johnny from the Got Faded Japan podcast. What's up, my man?
Well, not a whole lot. I first want to say thank you very much for having me here. It is a pleasure to finally be on your show. Your show is absolutely spectacular. I've listened to a lot of your episodes.
Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun listening to your episodes, and to be here, it's just great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So just for some context, Johnny is my old friend. We've known each other for 10 years now since I've been in Japan.
So
Johnny gave me my first ever opportunities when I got to Japan. So Johnny
has
a podcast.
What opportunity was that?
Well, for instance, I was interviewed on his podcast. And also you booked me my very first shows in Japan at that little hole in the wall in Asagaya. What's it called?
Oh, Gamuso.
Gamuso, yeah.
Wow.
Some of my first live shows in Japan and you got them for me.
Wow, I know that Got Fit in Japan was like your first time getting some major exposure in Japan, but I thought like you had a couple of other shows before we did Gamuso.
Gamuso, the very first Gamuso I did was my first ever one, and then I did the Pink Cow in Roppongi, and then we come back to Gamuso, and that was the second one of Gamuso was the first time that was after I'd gotten famous, essentially, so that after I'd blown up on the internet, so that was the first kind of busy one. This man was very integral to the Lady Beard story. What a legend.
All right, well, I don't know much about the boys club here, so I feel a little bit excluded right now.
We love you. There's lots of love for you.
Look over your shoulder here right now.
Sorry,
so
I got
please,
too excited.
Johnny, explain to me,
yes,
or everyone listening right now,
okay,
who are you? What do you do?
I'm Johnny, and let's see, what do I do? I'm the creator.
You can
creator.
Write it down for
we
you.
Have like you have like a script about yourself. Yeah,
Johnny explains bio in first 5 minutes. Okay. All right, let's see. I'm the host of the Gafeta Japan podcast. It's a podcast that's been around since 2009. It's the longest running, biggest English speaking comedy podcast, but it's not as good as the podcast that I'm on right now. Yeah, I know. I love you guys.
Hey,
I love
you. Did that. You right did things. That. Yep. Yep.
I get free drinks.
It's right just things. Boiled water.
Yeah, it is.
That's
water.
How we roll.
It's hot water, but it was tea. But let's see. I do that. I'm the curator and creator of Tokyo Art Tank, which is a massive art exhibition that happens biannually here in Tokyo. Let's see. Other than that, I am the Spilt Ink. I'm an artist here living in Tokyo. That's pretty much mostly what I do.
DJ as well.
Oh, no, I was a DJ. Okay. I'm a retired DJ. And right. I was a DJ and I organized a lot of drum and bass and hip hop events here in Tokyo as well. I was doing that for about 10 years. Yeah, I do live painting at nightclubs all over Tokyo and Europe and a little bit in America. And and I'll do anything for a dollar.
Hell yeah, what I'm talking about. Let's get it. And by the way, you've been in Japan for like 42,000 years. Yeah?
What?
Before the dinosaurs, actually.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I feel like I'm a dinosaur. Sorry.
Right. Anyway, so where you're from, how'd you end up here?
Originally I'm from Michigan. I grew up there and then I lived in California. I went to college there and, I went to college there. I worked there for about 7 years and then I've been in Tokyo since I first came to Tokyo in 1998, but then I moved here in 2002 and, I've been in this beautiful, wonderful country ever since.
22 years.
2002.
Yeah, well, yeah, 1998 was much better than 2002.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, the 90s in Tokyo. Oh, my goodness. Yeah? I mean, we discussed that a little bit on my podcast, but man, it was a different world back then. It was great. Let's see. Shibuya was a different animal. Shibuya was actually kind of a dangerous place.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know, right? Surprising.
We're all like, like partying it up there.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, there's a lot of parties, a lot of clubs, a lot more clubs, actually. Different kinds of clubs. And the west side, the Dogenzaka area, people will be like, yo, if you go to Dogenzaka, you know, you got to watch your back, you know?
What?
And then they're like, whatever you do, do not go to Kabukicho. Kabukicho, oof, dangerous place. And
I'm like, really? Kabukicho in Shibuya?
I know, yeah.
Shinjuku still has a bad rep, though.
They got bad reps, but I mean, there's like a Starbucks in every corner.
Sure. Fair enough. It's gone a little bit safer.
It's very touristy now as well. Yeah,
but super touristy. I wouldn't say it's still super safe. It's a little bit dodgy.
Yeah, okay, but compared to Detroit, I don't know. It's a different animal.
Fair enough.
Hang on, right. So Shibuya was sketchy. Yeah. Shinjuku was super sketchy. Mm. Well, tell us more about the United States. You said it was awesome. So all I've heard so far is it was dangerous.
Boy, I live in the sketchy. So yeah, it was fantastic for me.
All right.
Question, why Japan? That's like, why were you interested in Japan in the first place?
Oh my gosh. How much time do you guys have?
Oh.
Let's see. Well, when I lived in San Francisco, I had two Japanese roommates. And because I had two Japanese roommates, always there's a lot of Japanese kids in my apartments. And back then I was a DJ. And so when my two roommates would have all their friends come over, basically they would come over, I'd play records, we would have fun, you know, and we'd just enjoy our time together. And through them, I met a lot of Japanese kids. And I started organizing nightclub events at that time.
When you say kids, sorry to interrupt. When you say kids, you mean young adults. You don't mean small children.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 I was like, just making
kids in my apartment.
Sure.
I'm like, just a second.
It was a daycare.
All right, so you got all your Japanese bros are hanging out in your pad.
Yeah, all my homies, right? So like everybody is 18 plus age, right? Good. So yeah. When I say kids, that's what I meant.
Okay, good.
All right.
What's our demographic, by the way?
Well, you're using this word kids for crying out loud. That kind of variety of meaning.
Okay, all right. Young adults. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. Young adults. And so through them, I started meeting a lot of other DJs and so on. And before I knew it, I was like kind of big in like this, the DJ, I guess, world in San Francisco. I was organizing nightclub events, raves, all sorts of parties. I put myself through college by organizing raves and clubs and stuff. And I booked a ton of Japanese DJs. And I just met so many people and producers, promoters. I met tons of famous skateboarders. networks and scratch DJs. I used to scratch back then. It was a different world. And so when I came to Tokyo just to visit, I had so many connections with so many people and, like, you know, the club business, thus Dogenzaka and Kabukicho and all those wonderful places in Tokyo that we love. And, I just basically was set up because of, like, my friends. And so a lot of people come to Japan for many different reasons, but I came here because all my friends were here.
Oh, and you knew how to DJ, I guess, and had that kind of connection already.
Yeah. I mean, I don't DJ anymore. I mean, that was years ago, but it was a lot of fun.
I imagine Japan before the smartphone.
Yeah. Wow.
Would have been a difficult place to navigate. Because even now, as I think we've discussed, the address system in Japan is totally... So back then, like right now, we just put an address in our smartphone and it tells us where to go.
Yeah.
But you were here back when you had to find a map.
Treasure maps. So like whenever you went anywhere or whenever you wanted to go anywhere, like for example, if you're going to go to a nightclub, you would get like a flyer and the flyer would have a map that either went along with it or was on the map was part of the flyer. Or if you're going to go to a friend's shop or to maybe interview for a job at a company or something, they would send you a map, right? So you just get like a map and we called them treasure maps.
Oh,
I see.
Yeah, before the smartphone.
And that's why there's a map at every station and everywhere you look, there's a public map in Japan.
Because before it was just crazy. I think I heard a lot of times if you want to meet someone or in those days, if you wanted to meet someone, you had to just meet at the station. Because if you meet at a certain location, you might not find it.
Yeah, really? Absolutely. And that's why like certain stations have iconic meeting points. For example, Shibuya has Hachiko and Shinjuku has Alta and Ikebukuro.
Longer though. Alta is going to get turned down soon. So
is it?
Yeah, really? They're going to close Alta soon.
What's up with that? Number one
meeting spot in Shinjuku is going to close down soon.
What's up with that?
Yeah, they're just going to demolish the buildings. Too old, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there goes another heritage listed institution. All right.
Yeah, we're going to meet in front of Alta sometime soon.
So, yeah. Okay. But so here you are with several young adults and you now you're having a great time with your maps. And so now you know everyone in the nightlife already, in the nightclub scene and whatnot. And then what happened?
Yeah. How did you come back in 2002? So you came first to visit. Why did you decide to come back? How did you come back?
Oh, yeah. No. In 1998, when I first came here, I just came here to visit. And then I came in 1999. And then in 2000, I came every year after that.
Oh, wow.
Just because, you know, I mean, you know, when you've got friends in college, you know, your friends in college, they graduate and then they go back home. In my case, a lot of my friends went back home to Tokyo. They went back home to Kobe, Kyoto, Takamatsu or whatnot. So, you know, every year I just come back and visit my friends, you know. And back then, I mean, the American dollar was so much stronger than the Japanese. No. The Japanese.
Around, right?
No. What am I talking about?
The Japanese yen.
The Japanese yen. more tea, please. And so I don't know. For some reason, it was easy for me to come. I think because I was couch surfing when I came here. That was probably it. So yeah,
saving
it wasn't that expensive.
The hotel prices.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Now it's good to come if you're an American.
Yeah, big time, eh?
So what changed in 2002?
Yeah. We went from visit, I'm moving there.
Oh, then to move here? Oh, gosh. Okay. So, wow, my full story. I was working in advertising at that time as an art director at a company called Gray Worldwide. And in the early 2000s or late 1990s, the dot-com boom was massive. And a lot of our clients were dot-com companies like Oracle, Telsion, SmartAge and whatnot. All these companies are gone except for Oracle. So basically, when the dot-com bubble burst in the 1990s, pretty much San Francisco dried up. There's like no jobs anywhere. You know, you couldn't get a job at a cafe or anything. Luckily for me, I was DJing and I was organizing nightclubs and stuff like that. So my day job went away, but my night job was there. And I did that for about a year, just organizing events. But I mean, after a year of being a hardcore like event organizer, you know, it just becomes repetitive where you're up all night, you sleep all day, you just DJ, you know? And, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was fun, but I just didn't see my life going anywhere at that point, you know? And one of my really good friends, Taka, aka Satari One, shout out, he said, "Hey, John, why don't you come out to Tokyo and just do what you're doing over here? And we could get you a job at Kawasaki FM. It'll be great." And I was like, yeah, sure, let me try it out. So I came out and I stayed.
That is a great going to Japan story. That's an easy entry. Your mates just say, we'll get you a job. There it is, eh?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
But so, how did you then move from that to art in 2009?
Yeah, because not the same thing.
In 2009, no. I mean, I've always drawn. I've been drawing and doing graffiti and stuff like that since I was a little kid. And when I was working in advertising, I was an art director, and an art director creates the art and the conceptual design of an advertisement, be it a commercial or print, or back in the day we had newspapers. So we did a lot of that. I did a lot of highway designs and stuff, whatever. So
highway design.
You know, when you drive in the highway, you get the big sign that goes by.
Like
and
a
stuff.
Billboard?
Billboard, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I did that. So all art directors love art. They go to a lot of art galleries and stuff like that. And since I always drew and I always just did that, and I don't know, I just did my own thing. And after a while living in Tokyo, you know, I would just draw, and I met some artists, and I met a lot of artists. The music scene here and the art scene kind of go together. You know, a lot of artists are DJs, a lot of DJs like do graffiti and paint and stuff, or skateboard or whatever. The whole like kind of subculture of Japan kind of blends within each other, you know?
It's like people who do interesting things.
Yeah.
They all go together.
Yeah, they usually do interesting things together and then have other stuff that they do.
Community. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, you came to my art studio. I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sketchbooks. And basically, I met some hardcore serious artists. And through these guys, they're doing galleries and stuff. And they're just like, hey, you know, you should show some of your sketches, you know? And back then I was using the Japanese Fude brush, the Fude pen. I was doing these kind of like anime kind of characters and stuff. Wow. They weren't anime. They're kind of anime-esque or whatever. But if you go to my website, you can see all that stuff. It's the black and white stuff. But I was doing that for ages. And they're like, you should show that. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I showed some of my work. And when I showed my work, like, I mean, they started selling and people started liking it. And then I did that for a while. And then after that, one of my friends, we're at an izakaya late night. And one of my friends said, you know what? You should do color. And I'm like, color? No way. Color's for the birds. The whole world's colorful. Tokyo, there's so many colors in Tokyo. This is crazy. My friend's like, just try it. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I went to Sekaido in Shinjuku and I bought some cheap acrylics. And I went home and I started playing around. And I was like, you know what? He's right. They're good. And then from then, here I am with so many colors. Like my artwork is almost too colorful.
Well, how would you define your artwork?
Well, I do a couple of different styles of artwork. I do live painting at nightclubs still. Oh, so I'm still in the music scene, although I don't DJ. And when I do live painting at nightclubs, I use black lights with fluorescent paint and then spray paint. And I just do these. When I paint at like big nightclubs, I do these huge murals, which would be like maybe 4 meters by 3 meters or something. Oh. And then I do huge paintings of stuff. Like usually it's young, attractive people DJing or holding records or boom boxes. There's a lot of graffiti influence in that work.
So I find this whole live painting thing very fascinating. So let's dive into this. I don't know about you, but I don't think I've seen very much live painting. So have you seen live painting?
I only like Dr. Sketchies and stuff where it's like a class where people say, okay, now we have 5 minutes sketching. You sketch for 5 minutes. And next one, you get 10 minutes sketching. Wow. And then you get like half an hour sketching. Is that different?
No, so tell us the gimmick.
No. Okay. So first off, Dr. Sketchies is great. I love those guys. But basically what I do is I get to the nightclub before the event, and what I'll do is I'll set up a huge canvas. I'll make sure that the floors and the walls are protected before I do that. And then I'll set up black lights. And then once the music starts rolling and people start coming in and flowing and dancing, the energy gives me power and gives me enlightenment, I guess. It gives me
inspiration.
Yeah, inspiration. Yeah, that's the word. And then, you know, I just go to town. I start painting. And sometimes I'll have a concept beforehand and sometimes I won't. And yeah, I'll just paint something up. And it's a performance, you know, it's entertaining. It's interesting. Usually I'm in like a chill area, but it's by a bar or like in a different part of the club. Other times I'm actually behind the DJ or something. And it's just something for like, you know, the dancers and the people that come to the venue to enjoy an experience while I'm up there. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for me to do, you know, and it's a lot of fun for people to experience. And I've been doing that since 2011.
So there's a giant canvas.
Yeah.
And whilst a DJ plays and people dance and partying and whatnot, in real time, you're painting a giant mural, a giant painting.
Yeah.
Okay, it's very interesting. Do you know about this? I don't think I've ever seen this happen in real life.
I was like one of the first to do it.
Really? Yeah. In human history?
No. There's people in San Francisco doing that at hip-hop clubs, right? Hip-hop clubs and reggae clubs. They're doing that a little bit, you know? And when I came to Japan, there was some of my friends that are actually doing that. Some guys that actually are ex-Marvel cartoonists. Wow. Yeah, like Sig and Masa and whatnot. But so they were doing that, but they were doing it with lights, like bright lights. So I'd see them at a club with like the bright lights, right? And I was like, man, you know, if I ever did that, I'd have to use black lights.
Wait, hang on. Oh. With bright lights as in with spotlights shone onto the work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
black light, let me just check. Black light is like fluorescent light that makes the colors pop more. Is that correct?
Same thing, yeah. Okay. Well, similar, but yeah.
Yeah, those tube things that makes everything glow.
And they just had like normal lights on, but you decided to have the black lights instead.
Yeah. I've always loved black lights. When I was a kid, I had a fish tank, like a big fish tank with, freshwater sharks, like aerodactyl sharks. And I made it like a black light fish tank, right? So they'd be swimming around and stuff. And like the gravel was all fluorescent. The plants were glow in the dark plants and stuff. And so I had all these sharks swimming around. I thought it was like the coolest thing. So I've always loved black lights since I was like a little kid. And so, I mean, and I had black light posters when I was in college. I mean, who didn't, you know? And so when I started painting, I was like, dude, black lights. Now that's the way to go.
Just that story contains so many pieces of information which could separately be discussed. As first things first, as a child.
Yep.
In your room, you had a tank of sharks.
Were they real sharks?
Yeah. Freshwater sharks. Yeah.
What? But don't they get big? Are they just tiny? How does this work?
Well, you put them in the water and they swim around. You feed them once in a while.
Do they not get bigger?
They do get bigger. Actually, the cool thing about sharks and most fish, actually, they only get about as big where they feel comfortable in their environment. So if you have a big aquarium, the fish will get big. You know, they'll get super big. Goldfish too, you know? Oh. But if you have a smaller aquarium, in my aquarium, I forget how big it was. It's maybe, it could fit on this table. I think
it's a small one. I imagine this long thing.
Yeah, your shark stayed tiny shark?
No, baby shark? No, they're like this big. They're about as big as like, here.
That big?
No, they're about as big as your middle finger.
What? As big as my middle finger?
Yeah, about that big,
Is that, how is that a shark? That's like a tadpole.
Well, sharks are all sizes, you know. Really? You know, there's like thousands of different species of sharks.
You get a baby shark. I had no idea.
Iridescent rainbow. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. Yeah,
rainbow sharks.
Yeah, you could Google it. Yeah, they're freshwater sharks. I mean, you could also get saltwater sharks. And actually, there's a skateboard shop in Osaka that sells like clothes and skateboards and all sorts of cool stuff like that. And they have a huge fish tank full of saltwater sharks. And those things are big. And the cool thing about sharks is, oh gosh, you're going to get me started on sharks. Sharks are awesome because they don't have a gas bladder, which means they constantly have to swim around for them to breathe, right? So if you get a fish tank full of sharks, they're always moving around, always swimming, right? It's really cool to watch them, right? If you get a goldfish just stays there. And you're like, move, do something. Be cool, you know? But sharks, they're always swimming. They're always moving.
Fluorescent rainbow sharks.
And then you put a black light in there. You're like a Bond villain with your tank of sharks. That's the first thing to think of, right?
To feed them to the sharks.
If you lost a Nintendo game to one of your mates, you'd topple them in there and the sharks would devour them.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, they only eat, I only fed them like regular fish food. So, So
I was going to say.
No blood or anything like that, no.
So how do we get from owning sharks in your room as a kid to actually doing a tour in Europe as an artist?
Black lights, my friends. Black lights. It's all about black lights.
Okay, that was just like that's your kind of branding, I guess.
Love black lights, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And so you saw these dudes doing live art with non-black lights, white lights, and then you said, nuts to that, I'm going to do it with black lights.
Yep.
And someone said, okay, and you started doing that, and it was a hit.
Well, what happened was I didn't want to do it when they were doing it because the thing is they were my friends and I didn't want to copy them or anything like that.
Wait,
so
the guys with the bright light.
Yeah, the guys with the bright lights, right? Mm-hmm. So,
but they're not copying them. You're doing it differently.
I was doing it completely differently, but I just felt awkward being like, all of a sudden if I started painting, you know, like at nightclubs or whatever, I didn't want to copy them or kind of be like, you know, like a ripoff artist.
Right.
Exactly. Sure. So, but then they moved from Japan and one of my friends who organizes huge, at the time organized huge drum and bass events called Drum Drummer Bass Sessions, DBS. I was talking to him over a cup of coffee, and I just said, "Hey, man, would it be okay if I painted at your event?" And that was at Club Unit in Dakanyama, huge club, massive club. And he's like, "Yeah, you could do that sometime." And I was like, "Yes, that's awesome." But before I was going to do that, I was like, "I got to practice, right?" So I practice a lot in my bedroom. So I was like, I get late at night. I've had my black lights rocking. I paint like in my bedroom, these like big, like not big, but these little paintings and stuff. And then my friend Charlie came over, right? And my friend Charlie is also a nightclub organizer, but he does like drum and bass. No, he does techno. I think he did at the time. And anyway, at the time I was like, I'm all about drum and bass. But anyway, so he came over, he saw my paintings. He's like, "Johnny, what are these?" I'm like, "Well, I'm thinking about, you know, painting at a drum and bass event." He's like, "Well, paint at one of my techno events." And I was like, "Sure, why not?" He's like, "By the way, I've got an event happening in 2 weeks. You can paint there." And I was like, "This is fantastic. I got my first gig before my first gig," right?
Perfect.
And so anyway, I was getting ready to paint at his event, and I was getting all my paints together, and everything was great, and I was all set. I practiced, I prepared, I had everything planned out. And then the 2011 earthquake happened.
Oh. Yes.
And so basically that happened on a Friday at around like 1 p.m. or something. And the event that I was supposed to paint at was on Sunday. And this is a huge event at a club called, well, a big club in Shibuya, right? And so anyway, I went there on Sunday, 2 days after like the major earthquake, and nobody else was there except for like three DJs, one bartender, and my friend Charlie, the organizer.
No one's organized. No one's partying.
It's not really partying.
No, nobody's partying, but he had to. He's under contract. Mm-hmm. He had to organize the event. They wouldn't let him out. He's like, "Should we cancel?" And then the venue's like, "No." And he had all these international DJs that were coming in and stuff that did not come in, obviously, whatever. And it was really bad. It was a terrible situation. But for me, I wasn't nervous at all. But before, I was super nervous, but you know, with nobody being there, I just showed up and I painted and I was like, "Hey, you three guys, what do you think?" And they're like, "Thumbs up, I guess." And then after that, my other first event was absolutely fantastic because I had a little bit of practice.
Wow. So from the earthquake in 2011, how did you start a European tour in 2012?
Okay, well, I started painting, like at that time, nobody was doing blacklight painting. In fact, almost nobody was actually painting live at venues. It was just like me, you know, and I would talk to other organizers because, you know, being like an ex-DJ, but a retired DJ, I would just meet all these other promoters just, you know, just being at the clubs. And then from there, I just started contacting my old friends, being like, "Hey, man, you know what? I'm painting now and doing live painting. And is it cool if I paint at your venue or something, or paint at your event or paint at your rave?" And everybody said yes. They're like, "Yeah, sure, live painting. Absolutely. What is it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, well, you know," I explained it. And I did it. And I did it all over Tokyo. I did it like so many. And there was a point in time where I did it at every single club that I could think of, except for Ageha, which closed down.
Oh, Ageha. Mm-hmm.
So Ageha was the one that got away. But yeah, I got booked in other parts of Japan. I painted in Okinawa. I got flown down there. And then I saw this this interview with this tattoo artist that was like a tattoo artist that was just working in his shop like in Texas for like years and years and years. And then he decided to go on tour. He's like, "Why can't I go on tour? Bands go on tour." So he went on this huge tour all over America and started like touring with like rock and roll bands and stuff. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, "Wait a second. So if he's touring doing tattoos, why can't I tour all over the world painting live at nightclubs? There's nightclubs in every major city." So I started reaching out through friends and friends of friends or whatever. And I had a reputation for DJing and stuff. So I knew a lot of people. And so I contacted friends and I contacted people through a resident advisor, and almost everybody said yes. They're like, "Yeah, sure. This sounds like a great idea." And then through these German guys in Berlin that organized this event called Beat Freak, they're like, "Yo, we're going to hook you up with a tour." And I was like, "Oh yeah." Right. So then from there I had a tour and I painted in Greece and Athens. I painted in Berlin. I painted in Amsterdam, Paris. And I did that almost once or twice a year until the COVIDs.
Wow. It's very impressive. So you're a touring live painter, a touring nightclub black light live painter.
Say that three times.
Wow. And so one thing I'm a bit, if that's okay to ask.
Sure.
I think some people listening to this is that like paying the bills?
No, I have many different jobs. Well, right now, live painting doesn't pay any bills.
Oh, it does not? I thought that would be like, you know, touring all around Europe.
Thing you'd get some cash for.
No, you definitely get cash. And yes, it was absolutely fantastic. But since the COVIDs, a lot of my friends in Europe kind of like moved on with their lives, you know?
Oh.
Like, I mean, COVID messed everything up. Yeah. I mean, in fact, all my friends are organizing events. Only a couple of guys in Amsterdam are doing that right now. So yeah, so that kind of fell apart. But in Tokyo, yeah, I've got 2 or 3 gigs this month.
They're good.
So that's cool. Wait, this month and next month, and the next like 3 weeks, which is cool. But I mean, I'm an artist. I paint all the time. I do commission work. I still work on my website and so on. So yeah, I do that. So live painting, I mean, oof, God, if you're live painting full time, you're just traveling and painting and sleeping all day, up all night. Actually, sign me up for that.
it's the same lifestyle as being a DJ, isn't it? It's the exact same thing.
Pretty much. But you work twice as well, a million times more.
Of course, it's because one painting over the night takes how long?
Depending on the size, anywhere from 4 to 8 hours.
Oh, 8 hours?
Wow, that's so like through the night until the morning then.
Oh yeah, I'm first to arrive, last to leave, because I got to clean up and set up and all that stuff. And it's part of the job. It's a lot of fun, you know?
I have a question though, because, okay, painting at clubs where people are, you know, Gwen Mary.
Enjoying life.
They
might be
love
a
life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's the word for it?
Inebriated.
Inebriated.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
I'm sure there's some funny stories about you trying to paint and like drunken people trying to do something. Is there any kind of funny story you got?
Well, gosh. Every time I go to Europe, I almost died twice.
What?
Died twice?
I'm not sure if that's a funny story.
Every single time. Yeah. No, I'll be honest. Most people are very, very, very respectable. And they're very nice and very kind. Especially in Japan. Japan's like the best place to paint in. Usually in Germany, somebody will come up and be like, where's my paints? I'm like, I don't know. No, you're painting. I want to paint too. And I'm like, no. And, but that's only happened a couple of times. But when I paint live these days, I try to have like a barrier or something, or I'll be on stage or something. I've had some, not issues or any problems, but it's just like somebody wants to paint too. They're like, I am the most famous graffiti artist in Berlin. You must let me paint. And I'm like, no.
Oh, really?
No.
Not your gig.
I've got a contract, man.
Are there rules about what the painting needs to go from and to? Like, do you have to have the whole wall finished by the end of the night? Or is it just how it ends up is how it ends up?
How it ends up is how it ends up. Hopefully it ends up in somebody's hands.
Eyes, you sell it at the end of the evening.
Yeah. Or like halfway through, somebody wants to buy it and they'll like name a price. I'm like, oh, it's sold.
Right, really?
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like that is definitely... I mean, of course, I was going to say that's a job for an artist, isn't it? Everything is just no rules.
I'll sell anything.
Amazing.
I like the idea of like just on that night, you sell it straight to someone. So they have that memory of that night. Maybe that's when they met their partner or something.
It's like a different version of taking checkies, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also like a different version of our first song.
Yeah.
You know,
good point.
If there's a couple gets together that night, they saw you paint, you took that painting home. That night is now forever a picture
our
in their living
first
room.
First live black light art piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I think it was the last time I went to Berlin. I painted at this one club and there's a couple there and I kind of knew the dude. And anyway, we're hanging out and stuff after I finished the painting and stuff. And they're like, oh, in the morning, you should come over to our place and have breakfast. I was like, all right, cool. And then his girlfriend wanted the painting, right? And so she's like, oh, I want to buy the painting. I'm like, cool. So I sold them the painting, went over, had breakfast, and then they put it up on their wall that morning.
Oh, wow.
And it was there for like ages. I'm not sure if it's still there. Hopefully it is. But so I got a photo of that, you know, us early in the morning eating like eggs and sausage with this huge blacklight painting above a piano.
That's beautiful.
That yeah, it's
nice.
Kind of cool. Yeah.
Does it pop even when the blacklight is not on? Do you have to have blacklight to put up?
Well, it looks gorgeous. Like, I mean, my jacket is a blacklight painting. So if you want to take a look at it, I mean, with the blacklights, it looks amazing. But for the camera, you can see what it kind of looks like.
Oh, it's still super colorful.
Up?
Yeah.
Stand up. Okay, there we go. Yeah,
oh, wow. Okay, cool.
I can totally see if this will
that would really
all these
shiny
pinks and whatnot would be
the
popping.
The pinks, the yellow,
the white,
some of the blues.
So you did that.
Yeah.
That's yours.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So cool.
I used to paint jackets for the longest time.
Well, that's amazing.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Nice. So, now we can image it a bit better as well.
And now tell us about the podcast, because you've been podcasting since before it was cool.
Yeah, I started podcasting before Joe Rogan did it.
What?
Someone's getting sued.
Holy moly.
Yes.
Yeah, I should sue Joe Rogan.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Let's see. When I came to Japan, I worked at Kawasaki FM for a bit. I worked there for about a year, and it was a lot of fun. Me and my friend had this show called Livewire, where we spun DJ or drum and bass records, and we talked about the records, and we interviewed other DJs and stuff. And it was a great window for us to like kind of get involved in like the drum and bass and the music scene here in Tokyo, and that was cool. And then through that, once that finished, I just wanted to do that more and more and more, right? And then after about 6 months to a year, one of my friends introduced me to podcasts. Mm. And at that time, everybody asked, what's a podcast? You know?
Oh.
So I was like, okay, cool. I learned what a podcast was. And I was like, how do I do this? And so I started listening to podcasts. And at that time, there's like the Lunatic Radio, Mediocre Show, Sick and Wrong. And these were big podcasts at that time.
Right, okay.
And then from there, I started trying to like figure out how to make my own podcast. And after a little bit of research, I learned all you need is a computer and a microphone. And from there, I started my podcast called Got Fitted Japan. I did that with my friend. And we basically just interviewed people. We talked about the Japanese news, the interesting, wild, and zany Japanese news that happened every week. And that's just basically what we've been doing ever since. And so it's just now it's just, you know, two friends getting together, drinking coffee, and talking about the news.
All right. Yeah,
I remember the first one I did with him, we talked about the news. And on that particular week, there had been a case down out west somewhere where a gentleman had been arrested because he was breaking into apartments and stealing ladies' underwear.
Japanese news for you.
Japanese news, welcome.
It's very Japanese
news. Yeah, we don't even cover those kind of stories anymore.
So if you're interested in some not news covering, the Got Faded Japan podcast is the place not for that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's amazing. You were going to say something, please.
Yeah. How many episodes have we so far?
Well, the last episode that we had was with Lady Beer, and that was episode number 741.
741.
That's right.
Here we are so pleased with ourselves for 100.
Yeah, for 741.
Somebody stop me. Well, we used to do it every single week, you know, and then actually within the last month or so, we're just now doing it once every week or every 2 weeks or so. So
that's tremendous work, my friend. And every week for 15 years?
Yeah. So for about that, yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Good luck, guys.
Wow.
But I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's not just like podcasting and art. I also do a lot of other stuff. But the thing is, like, when I do podcasting, it's combined with the artwork. And when I do the artwork, it's combined with all the other stuff that I do. So everything that I do is kind of like spiderweb together.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
So yeah, like, you know, my art exhibitions and stuff like that. And the art exhibitions right now, that and the podcasting is going together, like, I guess, like sushi and wasabi.
Why don't you have a little plug and tell us about your art exhibitions coming up.
Oh, my art exhibition. Okay. Well, I'm the organizer of Tokyo Art Tank. Tokyo Art Tank is an all-inclusive art exhibition. And every 6 months, we have a huge event at Gallery Conceal. Gallery Conceal has 5 rooms plus a cafe. And it is absolutely insane. We have all sorts of artists, from painters to sculptors to photographers. And every single room has a different kind of a theme. But every single room gels with the next room. So when you come in, it's kind of like a story where you go into one room and you see some stuff that's a little bit more adult. Then you go into another room where everything's a little bit more anime, and you go into another room, which is more enchanting and spiritual. And it's like, there's a little something for everybody. You know, it's a great place for people to come and just kind of enjoy the best of art that Tokyo has to offer. It's a week-long art exhibition. And a cool thing about Tokyo Art Tank is it's all free. Entering is free. And every single day we have cool events, which are completely free. We've got poetry readings. We've got a film festival. We've got a fashion show. We've got a DJ night. We've got a band night. We've got 2 days. We got 1 day where like the Dr. Sketchy guys are coming in and they're going to teach like how to do portraits. And then we've got another day where people are coming in. We got artists coming in and they're teaching a watercoloring and so on. So it's, and everything is all free. It's all inclusive. And we're just trying to build like a fun art community for anybody and everybody to come and enjoy the best of Tokyo's art of all different mediums.
Well, sign me up. I'm interested now.
Yeah.
King of beauty.
Do you have
wonderful.
A flyer receiver or something I can take home?
I do. There's one right over there.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Okay. I'll wrap that in a moment. Yeah. Then. There we go.
Yep. It's Gallery Conceal on May 27th until June 2nd. And it's absolutely free. And anybody and everybody can come. And there's fun for the whole family.
All right. Well, you heard it here on Cat with Beard first. My friends, get down to Tokyo Art Tank on those dates. Mm. How are we going? Have we made it to the end? Anything else you want to tell the people about?
Anything
yourself?
Else you would like to plug?
God, well, it's kind of tip of the iceberg. I'm starting to feel really comfortable now. Like, hey, we should just do this again. My name is Johnny.
You'd like to see more Johnny on the podcast? Clickety clack in the comments. Hey.
Yow.
Okay. Well, I mean, for me talking about myself, I mean, whatever you guys want to know, I'm an open book, but I actually would like to do a lightning round with you guys.
Oh, that's right. This is the first time the guest has come with a thing they want to do that they brought to us. Hit us.
A lightning round.
So a lightning round is basically where I'm going to say two things and you got to say which one you prefer more.
Oh, but as fast as possible, that's why it's lightning.
Yep, we're going to go fast. Okay.
Are we allowed to speak at
lightning
the same time?
Round.
He switched it. Now he's interviewing us.
Yeah, kind of. I feel like we're the guests.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, I stole this from the Mediocre Show.
Oh.
Sorry, Eric. Okay. So, okay, lightning round begins. Okay. First is anime or manga?
Anime.
Oh. Okay. All right. Akihabara or Harajuku?
Harajuku.
Wait, which one's Akihabara? Oh, that one over there. Harajuku.
PlayStation, Nintendo.
Nintendo.
Come now. Don't go getting Lady Beard into trouble.
Oh.
Right, you got sponsors? Okay. Next, Mario or the Princess?
Princess.
Oh, look. Oh, listen. Look. Listen. Nah, Mario.
Okay, heels or clogs?
Pardon?
Heels or clogs?
Oh, clogs for me. That'll be fun and Dutch. Those clogs, those wooden shoes or heels.
Oh, I go for heels then.
Heels, clogs. Okay, MMA or pro wrestling?
Oh, well, don't go getting Lady Beard into trouble now. Come on, what is this?
Hey, come on, I got to make it interesting.
Hey.
Well, it just got to be pro wrestling then.
All right, thank you, Kathy Cat. Good job. I have no comment.
Okay, last and finally, sushi or sashimi?
Sashimi. Oh.
What do you need all those? What do you need those carbohydrates for, Kathy Cat?
Good point. Good point. But I like the ones where they do like aburi, where they like do a little bit of torching on it, and they don't do that on the sashimi.
When we were talking sushi, were you talking like Japanese sushi or like the Western interpretation of sushi?
It's up to you, bro.
California roll?
California rolls? No way.
In Australia, they have like all these crazy sushis now, interpretive sushis,
dragon roll.
Yeah, never stuffed by Japanese people.
The chocolate ones that they dip in cheese. Yeah, that's not sushi.
Yeah, no, she's just,
probably really good though.
The Japanese love seeing them. She already loves it. She's like, buys them just to know what it is.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, speaking of sushi, one of these days I'm going to make a sushi restaurant, but it's going to be a themed sushi restaurant.
Oh yeah?
With art on the walls and music playing?
No, but yes. No, I was thinking about having like a rock and roll like sushi restaurant because all sushi restaurants are very similar, right? But if you have one like a theme, like something like, I don't know, like a Hard Rock Cafe, not Hard Rock Cafe, but something with something like something with a kind of a theme like that would be absolutely really cool. Like a 1950s, like a Japanese 50s sushi restaurant, or I don't know. I mean, you could even have like a pro wrestling sushi restaurant. I mean, the sky's the limit, you know, because I mean, right now it's just sushi. It's very similar, except for the robot sushi places.
I love the idea. And I think generally what you do is you bring a lot of ideas to the table, but I also love how the tank in your children's room is the one that actually
Black light sushi.
But also that tank now goes back to Art Tank. So that tank of sharks has kind of gone a long way inspiring your life.
Up in a beautiful package.
Well, okay. All right. Well, that's kind of true to a degree. Tokyo Art Tank is called Tokyo Art Tank because the idea is like when you go to an aquarium, the best tanks are the ones that have like all like a variety of different fishes all swimming together. Right. And so my idea was instead of like a big aquarium fish tank with a bunch of fishes swimming together, you have a bunch of different artists with different kinds of art all together. So when you go there, it's like going into a big fish tank that's beautiful and enchanting and inspiring. And you're just there and you're just absorbing all the artwork from all the different fish, AKA artists.
That's beautiful.
Really. Yeah.
All right. Final thing I would like you to answer. If anyone wants to be a Johnny, if anyone wants to even just remotely live the life that you're living. I don't recommend it.
Being an artist, oh my goodness, it's like hours upon hours upon hours of being alone in a studio, listening to great music, drinking coffee. Actually, no, it's the best life ever. But yeah, you know what? Let's see. Any advice? I was that an earthquake?
Earthquake.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that means we should.
Which is that? Is that an indication to get out of here?
Yeah, probably to get out of here, Quake.
Oh my goodness.
Go and listen to the Got Faded Japan podcast. Turn up at Tokyo Art Tank. And you don't have social media plugged, do you?
Yeah, I'm all over the place. I'd recommend Instagram, The Spilt Ink, or Got Faded Japan. The Spilt Ink is my artist name, THESPILTINK. Yeah, just Google that, look it up. I'm all over the place. I got a website and stuff. So yeah, if you want to book me, I'm available. Or if you just want to say hi, hello.
Awesome.
Super, fantastic.
And on that note, thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on another joyous installment of
Cat with Beard.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Danya.
In Tokyo and craving soul food, we've got just the place for you. Soul Food House in Azabu-Juban. Check out what we do at soulfoodhouse.com. Come by and taste the love. We look forward to feeding you.
Are you at Harajuku with some out-of-town friends or your family or significant others?
Yeah!
Do you want to chill and drink beer and eat sandwiches while your friends overpay for glitter unicorn socks?
Yeah!
And the flavor's gonna make you complete at Harry's Sandwich Company.
So come on down to Harry's Sandwich Company in the heart of Harajuku, right off Takeshita Street. See you there!
Yo, what's up, faders? Got Faded Japan has got a new sponsor. Our new sponsor is Gamuso Bar, located in Asagaya, Tokyo. If you're kicking it in Tokyo and you want to get your groove on, get your fade on, you better get your ass down to Gamuso. Gamuso is located in Asagaya. It's about 11 minutes from Shinjuku Station on the Chuo Line. Gamuso has weekly bands, weekly performances. And hell, if you got your own event and you want to hold it at Gamuso, we'd love to host you. So contact Gamuso at www.gamuso.com. That's www.gamuso.com. That's right. Gamuso has not only beers in the bottle, but beers on tap. We've got every drink you want. So come on down to Gamuso. Gamuso. And if I'm working, tip me.
Have your attention, please. Attention.
Hey, yo, what's up, Vaders? Johnny here. You know I love booze and news, but I also love art. So come on down to thespiltink.com and check my art out. I've got tons of stuff there for you to check out. And I've got paintings, I got prints, I got videos. And I tell you what, if you like a painting, I could probably sell it to you. And I tell you what, if I can't sell you that painting, I will definitely sell you a print. I've got prints of all my work. Prints are about 2,000 yen each, about 20 bucks. But if you buy two, you get the third one for free. So come on down to thespiltink.com. Yo, and on top of that, I'm looking for commissioned work. So if there's something that you want me to do, I can make it for you. Just check out my stuff and see if you like my style. And if you like my style, I can definitely paint you anything on canvas, paper, whatever. I've done it all. So come on down to thespiltink.com. That is THESPILTINK.com. TheSpilledInk.com. Proper.
Mitsuya Liquors. Yo, what's up, faders? If you're in Asia, if you're in Japan, if you're in Tokyo, if you're in Asagaya, you better get down to Mitsuya Liquors. That's right. For the most affordable prices in Japan, you can get over 300 different kinds of beer. That's right, over 300 different kinds of beer. And of course, they got all the shochu you need, all the sake you need, and of course, they got wine from California to Italy to France to New Zealand. They got it all. When I say they got it all, they really, seriously got it all. There's no joke about that. So get down to Mizzia Liquors. And if you go in there and you say, got bit of Japan, you will be more than welcome to go into their back room and drink those beers that you just purchased. That's right. Got bit of Japan at Mizzia Liquors. And three times a week, they have a sushi chef there. So get your sushi on, get your drink on, get your fade on, and come on down to Mizzia Liquors, located comfortably in Asagaya, about 5 minute walk from the station. Mizzia Liquors.
My little brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Will you wait till mom finds out, buddy?
I've got a government job to abuse and a lonely wife to fuck.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Cows of pressure! I can't take it! I can't take it! I can't get to it!
You sure I should do this, man?
We're going drinking! We came, we saw, we kicked his ass!
Your move, creep.
Man, I will never forgive your ass for this shit. This is some fucked up repugnant shit.
Suicide, it's a suicide.
Fuck it, dude. Let's go bold.